I was supposed to stay in the museum. Amendment is sound. Yeah. that pertains to trying to create the regulatory framework for the internal audit unit. So first amendment there is 48 to say that the audit committee must establish an audit charter to guide its audit approach and, in consultation with the internal audit unit, that of the internal audit unit. When one turns the page to 33 at clause 51, or 50 subclause 1, that regulatory framework is further set out. The accounting officer must establish Parliament's internal audit unit, which must conduct internal audits in accordance with the standards set by the Institute of Internal Auditors for the purpose of maintaining consistency with internal audit functions in other organs of state. And the last amendment, Honourable Chair, is clause 56, preparation of financial statements. We deleted the reference to the Public Finance Management Act and inserted the following, and the clause will read, for each financial year, the accounting officer must prepare annual financial statements in accordance with the standards of generally recognized accounting practice, and in the absence of an applicable standard, in accordance with standards prescribed by the executive authority for the purpose of maintaining consistency with other organs of state. Those are all the amendments that we discussed last time, Chair.
Okay. Members, I trust that we are in agreement that all the amendments that we had asked that they be incorporated have been incorporated. And all that remains for us now is to then, as a matter of procedure, go through the bill clause by clause and then formally consider it. And we therefore commence with that process. We start on page 5 with the preamble and then clause 1, definitions. We proceed to page 8, the objects of the bill. It's clause 2. We move on to clause 3, page 9, clause 4, we move on to 5, clause 6 with that amendment, clause 7, clause 8, acting accounting officer is supposed to be clause 9, advocate. It's not numbered. Yeah. And then clause 10. Clause 11. Clause 12,13, 14, clause 15, clause 16, we should have taken a resolution that clauses 1 up to 56 be read together. I know there is a process like that where you say that from clause 1, it happens in Parliament, where they say orders number 10, 11, 12, 13 up to 18 must be read together. Clause 18. Clause 19. Clause 25, 26, 27, clause 28, 29, 30.
Providers, ownership of the service provider, and automatically this product has to be My question would be, for instance, say in finance we had some proposal or regulation and we had not specified that finance committee should look into that. And when we woke up out of from our sleeping bed, there were a number of things and regulations superseded the principal head, some of them. So did we came up with the same thing met or not when the committee will meet and the committee spoke about it, these regulations who should look them and perhaps once more like what we did here in finance said if there is a tendency of these regulations going through whilst we are on the constituency period or whatever. So that these kind of things will be regulation should be coming through when parliament the committee, the specific committee can be able to debate them and make some.
Subject of the financial administration of Parliament.
Assembly agreeing passed a similar resolution in the third part of the civil rules of the procedural regulation as submitted to the committee subsequently gave prior notice of introduction of the draft legislation in government 2166 dated the 28th of October 2005. The Gazette also contained an invitation to interested persons and institutions to submit written submissions on the draft legislation. The committee deliberated and held public hearings on the submission received. Consultation with the Treasury also took place. The committee therefore reports that it has completed its deliberations on the matter, and in accordance with Rule 243, introducing the financial management of Parliament bills in 2008. National Assembly proposed such a statement. Agreed to? Can't hear you. Okay. And then Brent says no more cheering. Thanks, members. I take this opportunity to thank members for having taken time and putting a lot of thoughts and thoughts to this video. As we can see, it has acquired the name of the old and the new. That's what it was called. Whenever it came out, it would be programming with joint rules. That's how it is known. That it is the old and the new. So now we have put the old and the new to the rest.
Benefits of the tax treaty. Mr. Van der Merwe will be dealing with the technical provisions of the tax treaty. Coming to the ratification process, before a tax treaty can come into force, it has to be ratified by Parliament. In South Africa, the ratification process is done in accordance with Section 231 of the Constitution, read with Section 1082 of the Income Tax Act. Hence, we are here today for the ratification of the treaty. It's the requirement of the Constitution. Reasons for South Africa-Netherlands tax treaty. This is the renegotiation of an existing tax treaty. The first tax treaty between South Africa and Netherlands came into force in 1972. The revised tax treaty, which is here for ratification today, was signed on 10 October 2005, and it will terminate the old tax treaty. It is important to note that this tax treaty has been ratified by Netherlands. However, South Africa delayed the ratification process pending renegotiation of the Article 10 dealing with the taxation of dividends due to the proposed changes to the South African domestic law. As you know, that South Africa is converting STC to be a dividend tax at shareholder level. The implementation of this proposed STC conversion is subject to renegotiation of other tax treaties that have a zero rate withholding tax on dividends. The revised tax treaty with Netherlands presented to Parliament today represents one of those treaties. Also, the revised tax treaty will address some of the aspects that were not present in the old tax treaty. Coming to the investment flows between the two countries, investments by Netherlands. The total investment by Netherlands into South Africa were 31.9 billion in 2005 and 30.7 billion in 2006. The investment by South Africa into Netherlands amounted to 16.8 billion in 2005 and 21.4 billion in 2006. You can see that Netherlands is investing more in South Africa than we do in Netherlands. Coming to the trade flows between the two countries, exports to Netherlands were 14.8 billion in 2005, 18 billion in 2006, and 19.8 billion in 2007, while imports from Netherlands were 5.4 billion in 2005, 7.5 billion in 2006, and 8.9 billion in 2007. With regard to the trade flows, South Africa is exporting more to Netherlands than we are importing from them, which is good for the trade deficit number. So Mr. van der Merwe will be dealing with the technical provisions of the tax.
Thank you, Chair. Just to deal with the technical aspects, and just a general overview, that the purpose of these agreements is to remove barriers to cross-border trade and investment. This is done by eliminating the possibility of double taxation as far as possible, creating certainty of tax treatment, reducing withholding tax rates, prevention of fiscal evasion, which deals with exchange of information between tax authorities, assistance in collection, and also the resolution of tax disputes and consistent interpretation. Turning to the agreement before us, or the convention before us, I'm going to deal with this in two parts, Chair, because the first one is an explanation of areas of the agreement signed in 2005. Some of the provisions of the 2005 agreement have been amended by the protocol which was signed 2 months ago. So I will refer to those as well, Chair. As always, this agreement closely follows the OECD Model Convention, which forms the foundation for the vast majority of DTAs worldwide. A number of these articles are different from the normal SA approach. These articles and the normal articles of interest in the SA-Netherlands Treaty are as follows. First of all, under Article 4, which defines the term resident, which is important in that only residents may use the qualify for the benefits of the treaty. Paragraph 1b includes in the term a pension fund that is recognized and controlled according to the statutory provisions of a contracting state, the income of which is generally exempt from tax in that state. This is a provision which we would not always have in our treaties, but it's something that Netherlands wanted, and it boils down to the fact that of the state's interpretation of the phrase liable to tax. In South Africa, we regard a pension fund as liable to tax until an exemption kicks in and takes it out, which is not the case in Netherlands. So that provision takes account of an issue from the Netherlands side. Article 5, dealing with permanent establishment. Permanent establishment is the threshold which needs to be crossed before business profits may be taxed in the source state. With regard to construction, building sites, assembly or installation projects, a resident of one state can enter into these activities in the other state and will not create a permanent establishment under this treaty until a period of 12 months has gone by. In other words, no PE if the building site construction, assembly or installation project last less than 12 months. That, of course, is a bilateral provision. Article 8, dealing with shipping and air transport. The normal rule with regard to shipping and air transport is simply that the state of residence retains the sole right of taxation. So, for example, South African Airways might fly from Johannesburg to Amsterdam. Their profits are taxable only in South Africa. Vice versa, of course, KLM operating from Netherlands to South Africa are taxable only in the Netherlands. This is the normal rule for international shipping and air transport. In this particular agreement, we have provided also for a rule establishing the place of effective management of a shipping enterprise, which is in fact on board a ship. In other words, we're probably talking about a very small shipping operation where the operator has no office or fixed place of business on land, but merely operates from the ship. In that case, we say that the place of effective management would be the home harbour of the ship. Paragraph 3 deals with profits from the rental of ships and aircraft, and it provides two rules. One is that rental of ships and aircraft which are used in international traffic will be taxed only, of course, in the state of residence. However, if that rental of ships and aircraft is in respect of use not in international traffic, it will only fall under this article and therefore taxable in the state of residence only if those profits are incidental to the main operation. And that is also a normal provision, but spelt out in more detail in this particular convention. Article 10, dividends. Chair, I'm going to come back to under protocol, because this, of course, is the one that was primarily amended by the new protocol. Article 11, on interest. In terms of this convention, paragraph 1 provides that interest arising in a contracting state and beneficially owned by a resident of the other state shall be taxable only in the other state, in other words, the state of residence. And if I turn to Article 12 on royalties, the rule there is exactly the same. So Netherlands taxes theirs, South Africa taxes their residents. Article 17 on pensions and annuities. We negotiated once again a provision which provides for source state taxation of pensions, which was somewhat different to the 1972 agreement. Paragraph 2 of that Article 17 goes further and provides that pension and other payments made under the provisions of a social security system of a contracting state shall only be taxed in the first mentioned state. And paragraph 4 provides that the transfer of a pension from a pension fund or an insurance company in a contracting state to a pension fund or an insurance company in another state will not restrict in any way the taxing rights of the first mentioned state. This has not been an issue for us, Chair. It has been an issue for the Netherlands in that there are apparently a number of schemes operating between the Netherlands and Belgium. So this is really an anti-abuse provision for the Netherlands as opposed to South Africa. Article 19, dealing with professors and teachers. The article provides an exemption from tax in the host state for 2 years in respect of visiting researchers or teachers. However, once again, the condition is there that that exemption will only apply if the remuneration comes from outside the host state. And it will not apply to income from research if it's undertaken not in the public interest but primarily for the private benefit of a specific person. Turning to Article 24, Chair. This deals with offshore activities, and what happens here is that throughout the agreement, thresholds for taxation are created in the host state. Of course, if we're talking offshore activities, we're talking natural resources, and therefore those thresholds are significantly reduced to create quicker source taxation in the source state in respect of offshore activities. So for argument's sake, the threshold for taxation of salaries, the threshold for the creation of a permanent establishment, the threshold for physical presence in respect of rendering professional services is cut in every case from 183 days right down to 30 days. Paragraph 7 then goes along and says that in respect of business profits and also the professional services, if tax is proved to have been paid by the South African person or entity rendering those services, then the Netherlands will give them a credit for that particular taxation paid in South Africa. Article 26, the article deals with mutual agreement procedure. The mutual agreement procedure in its normal form states that where there is a difference in interpretation and application of the convention between the two competent authorities in Netherlands and South Africa, under this article we will endeavour to solve that problem. Paragraph 5 of this article then provides that if there's if that possibility of solving the problem is difficult or we're not able to arrive at a suitable solution, then we can resolve that problem by means of arbitration. However, it should be agreed to by both the states and the taxpayers concerned before that arbitration would in fact come into play. Article 28 deals with assistance in recovery. Once again, Chair, we've updated it and used the very latest international model article in the new protocol, so I'll mention it there again. Article 30, dealing with members of diplomatic missions and consular posts. Paragraph 3 of that article provides that this convention will not apply to international organizations, organs, and their officials, and members of a diplomatic mission or consular post of a third state who are present in either the Netherlands or South Africa, if they are not liable to the same obligations in respect of tax on income or capital as are the residents of that particular state where they are present. That is also a normal provision dealing with the so-called multilateral organizations. We then have a protocol, Chair, in the in the 2005 agreement, which sets out a number of agreed interpretations in respect of this treaty. This was merely to draw attention to the fact that we were following, or underlining the fact that we're following international consensus in interpreting a number of the articles in this convention. But in particular, the provisions of paragraphs 9, 10, 11, 12 and 14 apply only in respect of the Netherlands and deal with specific issues from their side. For example, Article 13 dealing with capital gains tax, Chair, provides for Netherlands to impose what I might loosely call an exit tax when people emigrate from the Netherlands. So that how it would work is they would value that person's assets on the day he leaves the Netherlands. Article 13 then specifically gives Netherlands a taxing right in respect of the sale of those assets at any time in a period of 5 to 10 years after he's left the country. This of course is something the Netherlands needs because their assessment is based on the fact that the person has left the country and therefore is no longer a resident. In South Africa, under domestic law, the capital gains tax kicks in the day before he leaves. And on that day, he's still a resident of South Africa and we have an unlimited taxing right. So it's not an issue for us. However, in the negotiation of this treaty, we agreed with the Netherlands that they were right to ensure that they retained this taxing right, but that the value to be taxed should not include an appreciation of the value which took place after he'd left the Netherlands. So, therefore, paragraph 9 of the protocol introduces a formula which takes out the appreciation in value after that person has left the Netherlands and, for argument's sake, come to South Africa, which we thought was fair. They agreed. Paragraph 11, as I mentioned earlier, Chair, pensions are taxable also in the source state, the state in which they arise, the state in which the services are rendered. The Netherlands agreed to this, but then wrote into this convention that in respect of these pensions which are then taxable in the Netherlands, that they would have an exemption of up to 10,000 euros per annum in respect of pensions. That of course applies only to the Netherlands, not to South Africa. So that's a unilateral provision. I'd like to then turn, Chair, to the protocol which amends the 2005 agreement and go straight through to Article 2 dealing with taxes covered. Paragraph 4 was merely inserted for completeness and bringing it into line with the latest language internationally, and that just ensures that competent authorities of the contracting states shall notify each other of any significant changes that have been made in their respective taxation laws. Those changes would be, of course, those changes which would affect the operation of the agreement between the two countries. The clause dealing with Article 10 on dividends has now been brought into line with our latest proposals regarding these rates in all the protocols we've renegotiated. Therefore, the dividend rate in the South African-Netherlands protocol will allow for withholding of tax in the source state, the source state being the state in which the company paying the dividends is a resident, and that limitation is 5% of the gross amount of the dividend if the shareholding is at least 10%. For all other cases, in other words, portfolio investment, the maximum amount of taxation is 10% on the gross amount of the dividends. Article 17 is amended. That's the article dealing with pensions, annuities and social security payments on this basis. The Netherlands did not particularly want to tax pensions, allowances and benefits based on the Netherlands laws and regulations concerning financial support to victims of the Second World War and their next of kin. So what we've agreed in this convention is that those pensions shall be taxable only in South Africa, which takes away Netherlands' right of taxation. Of course, under South African domestic law, we only tax pensions where the services are rendered in South Africa. So this income would not be taxable in South Africa in any event. The bottom line of this, Chair, is simply that Netherlands has given up its right of taxation in respect of those payments which it made to residents of Netherlands regarding financial support from the Second World War. I would assume that this would probably be something which disappears in due course. Article 27, exchange of information. We've updated this to follow the absolute latest exchange of information articles in international usage at the moment. It gives us the opportunity to exchange information in respect of taxes of every kind and description, regardless of any laws on bank secrecy. So it's very much in line with our policy in that exchange of information should be as full and complete as possible to try and combat tax evasion. Paragraph 3 then also allows for this information to be given to an arbitration body which may be set up under the mutual agreement article for purposes of reaching a decision, but of course with the same restraint on the use as all other information. Article 28 replaces the article on assistance in collection of taxes in the 2005 agreement, and all we've done here is to ensure that we use once again the latest model of this article which is available in international tax convention models. It allows for the states to collect assessed taxes on behalf of each other, but only when those taxes have become absolutely finally payable without recourse to law in the state which is requesting the assistance. And those are the major points, Chair, in the 2005 agreement and the amending protocol which was signed in July. Thank you, Chair. Could I reply to that, Chair? Thank you, Chair. With regard to the first question dealing with the termination of the 1972 agreement, what we provide there is that the 1972 agreement is only terminated in respect of any period covered by the 2005 convention, so that immediately the 2005 convention is ratified in both states and begins to operate, that the 1972 convention is effectively terminated. And that's to ensure that there's no gap in coverage between the termination of the 72 agreement and the entry into force of the 2005 agreement. So it's based rather on saying that 72 continues to apply and is terminated in respect of any period which is covered by the 2005 agreement going into the future. With regard to the point on changing of treaties, treaties are changed not anywhere near as often as domestic law, and that's why they're used to give consistency, to give certainty of treatment to taxpayers. Once they're in force, those treaties operate, and if there's a conflict between domestic law and the treaty, well then the treaty prevails. So even though domestic law may change year to year, and it does in every country in the world, the provisions of the treaty as such will continue to apply, and it's only in those situations where it really is an issue which is of major concern to the minister or to parliament that we would go back and renegotiate. So for argument's sake, that is why we went back and renegotiated on dividends, because this was a major switch in policy. Turning to the second question, Chair, which was this treaty is very much in line with what we have with virtually all the other European countries, for argument's sake, France, Italy, Britain. The majority of them have very similar terms. Of course, if we're going to look at the treaties with newer EU members who have a certain different focus as compared to the more to the older members, if I could put it that way, they would have a slightly different approach in policy in terms of more taxation in the source state and less as opposed to the older members. There is no EU-South Africa multilateral treaty for avoidance of double taxation. These treaties are virtually all over the world done only on a bilateral basis. The only multilateral agreement on avoidance of double taxation that I'm really aware of that operates at the moment is the one between the Nordic states, Sweden, Denmark, Finland, Netherlands, Norway and Iceland. Those countries have a multilateral agreement. If I look at it, Chair, and this is off the record, it's a nightmare because they have so many reservations because it's so hard to get consensus between five or six countries as opposed to a bilateral agreement. With regard to the question of how much you bring in or how much you don't bring in, Chair, this point has been raised, and it's a question of, this is an agreement which is there to be used by taxpayers. It's there to encourage investment. It's impossible to say that someone physically came and made an investment in your country because of the treaty. He wouldn't tell you that. Yes, the Reserve Bank would no doubt have statistics, as my colleague has indicated earlier, of how much investment there is between the countries. This encourages it and makes South Africa a more attractive destination, but it's virtually impossible to put a monetary value on it because people wouldn't say, well, I'm coming to South Africa because we have a treaty. They would merely do it because of the whole structure of domestic tax law, the treaty, and of course all other factors relating to investment decisions. With regard to the pensions, I'm sorry if I wasn't clear on that, but it's only in respect of compensation paid to Second World War victims and their family, where the Netherlands has said, South Africa, you have the sole right to tax this, and that's because under domestic law we wouldn't tax it anyway, and they don't want to tax it. it certainly would not apply to, for argument's sake, pensions earned from normal pension funds in the private or government sector. It's very limited. Thank you, Chair.
Mm-hmm.